Speaking of technology, let's talk tech.
Tech Talk with Lee Stark.
Good morning, Lee.
Morning, mate. How are you going?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
I'm okay, listening to news about flying cars.
Flying cars, yeah. One of these days, I suppose, we'll come back in 100 years if we could, and there'll be flying cars all over the place, Lee.
We've been hearing about this for ages. I actually saw a prototype of one several years ago, and it was supposed to be out by now, and it's still not out.
Yeah, well, I'm sure in time to come, though, Lee, there will be such a thing as a flying car.
Yeah, sure. It'll just take people a while to learn how to use it so they don't crash into each other mid-flight.
Let's ask a couple of listener questions here of you. This is from BJ. He said, I have had Google Chrome for a couple of years. I have it connected to TV using wireless broadband internet. He said, I'm not able to watch ABC iView with it. My phone and tablet, no problems, but I can't watch the ABC iView. Why not?
Google Chrome, as it, did you say Chrome or Chromecast? It sounds more like he's talking about a Chromecast.
He's got here Google Chrome. Maybe it is a Chromecast.
So if it's Google Chrome, it sounds like a problem that ABC has. It has it with my account as well, by the way. I've got two accounts. One of my accounts is actually locked up, and I have no idea why. It's one that I signed up with an Apple ID. And so from what I can tell from iView is that when an account isn't not set up properly or something to do with it on their end, you can log in, but it actually logs you out almost immediately, and there's no error message. So it sounds a little like his problem. The solution I would have to try it is to see whether he can create a new account using an email address or a different single ID login, so Facebook or basically an Apple account or another Google account, simply to see if that lets him through, because it sounds like an authorization problem in that whatever he's using on Chrome isn't going through on that device.
Okay. I tell you what, it frustrates me enormously. If you're watching a show on binge, for example, I think binge is the worst if you're watching something on binge, and you might be watching it in the lounge room and you want to go into the bedroom, you've got a telly in the bedroom, so you turn off the TV in the lounge room and, you know, you go into the bedroom, you clean your teeth, whatever, get ready for bed, you hop into bed, you turn on the remote control, and binge wants you to sign in again from that room.
Yeah, so that has to do with the actual requirements of the different plans that are on there. So that's part of, and Netflix has started doing the same thing, and Disney has kind of started doing it with part of its password sharing problem. Effectively, the lower plan you subscribe to, you get one concurrent TV. Now, you've already said you're turning the TV off, but technically to these services, when you turn the TV off, you're still technically logged in on that device. So concurrent can also mean the device you're using at the time. So I think on the standard binge plan, it's like one user at a time. On the other ones, it goes to two and then it goes to four. So the idea is they want you to pay more money so you don't have to log in on those devices.
Yeah. Well, I ain't going to do it, Lee.
No, I'm much the same for what it's worth.
Sarah wants to know, she currently stores her photos in Google Cloud through her phone. She said, I recently got a message telling me that I have used over 80% of my storage, and I was told that I should subscribe and pay more for more space. Sarah wants to know, is there a cheaper, she says in brackets, free alternative? I've lost my photos in the past when I wasn't uploading them, but I don't want to pay a monthly subscription.
So there's no such thing as free storage per se. There are cheaper options, that's for sure. They won't necessarily offer you the convenience of them all. So the upside of something like Google Photos, very similar to iCloud storage, is that the updates, like the uploading, happens pretty much automatically and it's backed up. The way Google does it is it actually, you've got two options on Google Photos. You can either upload them as they are, which takes up more space, or you can compress them to a fraction of their size, which takes up less space but downsizes the size a bit. That's actually something I do. In terms of the cheaper option, because that obviously is a yearly cost, you can pay anywhere as little as, you know, a few bucks a month to $100, $200 a year for that sort of service. The cheaper option, weirdly, is to actually get yourself something like an external bit of storage and plug it into your phone or plug it into your network and back backup that way. Because if you buy something like, say, a 2 terabyte drive for peanuts, they're about $40-$50 these days. And because all phones have USB connections, you just plug it in there and you back it up. It's obviously not as seamless as automatic backup from what Google Photos or even Apple iCloud sort of Photos does. But if you're cognizant, you're aware that you need to do it, you know, once every couple months or so, you're backing up to a much cheaper long-term solution that can actually work. If you want it to happen in kind of in the background, what I would suggest is getting this thing called Network Assisted Storage, or NAS. That's basically a hard drive that you plug into your router, or you plug into your network effectively somewhere, and as you run a bit of software in the background for your phone, your tablet, your computer, it'll just back up to that automatically often, so that you're backing up regularly to your kind of like your own personal version of Google Photos, but you're only paying it once. You're buying the drive cost and that's it.
Mary wants to know, is there something that she can use that manages all of the streaming services?
No one's ever gotten this right. They're not a person as in a company to try this. Not technically. Weirdly enough, that's what Hubble was built for, and it didn't do a great job of it. It kind of just muddled the waters, I guess. The reality of how this works is that if you're an Optus subscriber, there's a system called SubHub, which allows you to kind of manage the solutions. It doesn't do a perfect job, but it exists. If you're a Hubble subscriber, you've got a way of doing that there, provided they're supported by Hubble, by Foxtel and Binge and Hubble, and they're not all there. Largely, the answer is no. I wish the answer was easy, yes. On Apple TV, the most interesting aspect is probably Apple TV. If you subscribe to all of them, it won't let you manage them as such. What it will do is kind of bring all the options together under the one system, so you can see when you do a search for a movie or a TV show, it'll show you what service it's available on, and so you can jump into that as opposed to just directly renting or buying it.
So in a nutshell, is there an opportunity out there for someone to put together an app or something like that that manages all of these streaming services, that you can go to this app, I suppose you would join, you would put your password in, your name, and you would join this app, and then you would be able to join all of the other streaming services through this app. Would you pay them? They would then pay the streaming service. But likewise, if you wanted to cancel the subscription, it would be an easy process that you would go onto this app and you would cancel your subscription to a particular streaming service through this app. Is that the sort of thing that is required in the marketplace?
Effectively, and that's what Optus did try to do with SubHub. That's what Hubble has tried to do with its Hubble service. As I said, they didn't really quite get there. You can subscribe through both of them and they'll both give you small discounts, but they're not staggering enough to really make it worth the while for you necessarily switching from your telco to be an Optus customer, or for you to necessarily say, I'm going to dump my Apple TV for a Hubble, because the Hubble experience was worse in general for other reasons. So what you're talking about, yeah, as an app, there is an Australian company, I'm trying to remember the name off the back of my mind, which did come up with a kind of a related service. It was a catalog of everything available on all the services, and you subscribe to their system. I think it's called Streamer TV or something like that. And the idea is they'll give you a catalog that you pay for yearly to show you everything that's available, but it wouldn't manage your access on the services. I think the critical aspect here is probably the way all these services technically work. They all want you to pay them directly, and that's often a lot of the situation of why they've tried to go around Apple and Google in terms of charging extra through their apps. You'll often be taken to their direct payment systems to actually pay for their services. So this sort of thing, you're right, there's definitely an opportunity, but nobody's ever found a way to make it work, largely because you've got to somehow go through every service and still abide by their rules.
Also, there's so many different services these days. I mean, in years gone by, there was Service A, and you were able to watch movies from company A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Now it seems as though Service A is there, but also now is Service A, B, C, D, E, F, G, that are separate services that you have to join, and you have to pay a subscription fee for those services, whereas they used to be all covered under that first subscription.
Yeah, although some of them actually share, and a lot of people don't realize. So a good example, weirdly, and I've mentioned it a couple of times on this show today, is Binge. I'm not a huge fan of Binge and how StreamMotion works in general, but because Binge is part of Foxtel, and Foxtel already has licensing agreements with several companies, you can typically find stuff that's available on Disney, on Stan, and even some commercial arrangements with Amazon and whatnot. You can find sometimes those programs on Binge that you won't find, that you have to find basically collectively on the entire list. It's one of those really unusual ones that works that way. Same with Foxtel. If you subscribe to Foxtel, you'll get access to those sorts of things. But if you are looking for services that kind of bring them together, weirdly enough, Binge is the one that does it, and I don't entirely know why, beyond the Foxtel licensing agreements.
What surprises me is some of the really old movies. I mean, they're up to 30, 40 years old. And they were, you know, hit movies in those days. But you, if you want to watch them these days, firstly, if you can find where they are, they still want to charge you $5, $6, $7 to stream those individual movies, to hire those movies.
To hire them specifically, yeah. It has to do with licensing agreements in general. There's a similar argument. I remember having this conversation with both Apple and Spotify several years ago, and Spotify would go on record about how it would actually work. If you want to stream music, a lot of the time in Australia, we don't even have the rights to actually stream certain albums, certain tracks, even if you can still buy the albums. It has to do with the way licensing agreements change on a fairly regular basis. It can seem remarkable that an album, a good example, are just soundtracks. Because soundtracks are managed by different groups around the world, not necessarily the music company or the movie company releasing it, but different music distribution agencies, you can actually find that some albums that you might already own can't be streamed in Australia, even though they can be streamed in America, simply because at a moment's notice, licensing agreements can change, and that can affect what you have. So, weirdly, if you have an old jazz album, I've got a lot of albums like this because I'm weird that way. I listen to a lot of jazz. They won't be available on streaming, even if I own the record and the CD, because of the way licensing works in Australia. It's genuinely crazy, and it's the same with movies.
I've got a question about Alexa and Sonos speakers, as you know. Mm-hmm. Sonos speakers work with a voice assistant, and one of those voice assistants is Alexa. So if you've got a Sonos system set up in your house and it works with Alexa, do you still have to have an Amazon Pop or an Echo or something like that set up to work in cohorts with the Sonos app? Or can you basically set it all up and get rid of your Echo Pop?
You can get rid of your Echo Pop entirely and get rid of all the Echoes you want to. The way Sonos does it, so Sonos actually originally did support Google as well. It only supports two assistants in Australia and most of the world. It supports the assistant built into Sonos, which is voiced by the man who did Gus in Breaking Bad, Giancarlo Esposito, and it also has the Amazon assistant as well. It did support Google, but there was a lawsuit between Google and Sonos, and now it no longer supports it for some really fun, obvious reasons. For the Amazon side of things, what you're effectively doing is adding a device that is supported by Echo. So if you go into your skills or your routine setting on your app, on the Amazon Echo app or Alexa app, it will just be added there. The reason you might have an Echo Pop or an Echo any type in the rest of your house is so you can command your larger speaker, if you're not in the same room, to do those sorts of things. So if you have an Echo Pop next to your bed that you're using as an alarm clock, because it can function as one, you might say, play this station on the Sonos Arc in the living room, and it would do that. The way to do that is obviously to link devices in your house, but it supports Alexa natively. So as long as you have that set up, it can work that way.
But if you have a Sonos speaker set up through Alexa and a routine, and you want to turn something on in a particular room, and you don't have the Amazon Echo in that room.
It supports it. The Alexa functionality is built into the speaker, and once it's set up and designed to work to the Alexa account that you sign up with, they're basically an Amazon account, the speaker will recognize your commands. So you don't need an Echo to do it. What a lot of people did in the early days before Sonos had microphones in their speakers, this is like Playbar era, Playbar, Playbase, things like that, what they would do is they'd put a small Echo, like an Echo Dot, alongside it, and that would act as the microphone. Now that Sonos has near-field microphones that pick up on your voice from a little bit further away, and all you have to do is say, hey Sonos, or say, hey Alexa in this instance, or you can modify it to hey Echo or hey computer, once it picks up on that sound, you're talking to Alexa at that point.
Okay, a big story for Australia is the government's going to try to get rid of the SMS scammers. Good luck, is all I say, Lee. I mean, good luck. Yeah. They're making it more difficult for them to appear in the inbox, but good luck in getting rid of the SMS scammers. I hope they can achieve their goal.
Yeah, this one's interesting largely because of how it works. The idea is that sometime in late next year, the Australian government will have a sender ID register system. So if you're a big company, if you're a JB or an ATO or a Harvey Norman, if you've basically got a large presence, you'll be able to register your name on this. And when companies, when scammers more specifically, try to send SMSs through a fake version of your sender ID, it won't just sit in the list. We've all seen that with Australia Post. You get a scam message and it's perceived as Australia Post. It's even registered under all the Australia Post messages you normally get, and that's because they're spoofing the ID. This system will effectively block out scammers from doing it. Where it gets complex is that, and the government obviously doesn't have as many details as someone like me would want for it, it doesn't necessarily help smaller businesses because obviously there's no way they're going to get on that list. And then the other downside is it also doesn't prevent scammers from doing other potentially dodgy things, which is what they're doing now, such as ignoring the sender ID altogether and just sending messages that look legitimate at random times in the middle of the night to make you seem like they're more urgent, so you click on them without thinking. Probably the aspect of this is more interesting is that Apple and Google are both working on solutions right now. Apple has one coming out next year that will support all businesses, and basically anyone who has a business, yourself, it could be a florist down the road, will be able to basically automatically send out information with a phone call. And meanwhile, Google Android devices support scam technology built in. So if someone alerts that a phone call or an SMS is a scam, it will actually pop up with any information as that call or SMS is being made.
Okay, it wouldn't be a tech segment, I suppose, if we didn't talk about a new TV. You say here in your notes that 65-inch size TV, it's the new normal, but there is a new one coming out from Hisense, and it is 110 inches.
Or 2.8 metres diagonal, if we want to talk in our terms, which is staggeringly large. I don't actually have a wall in my house that would support this, to be honest. The 100 inches was pretty much the maximum of where things were for the past year or two. You can spend a lot of money on a 100-inch TV. You can now spend a little bit more on a 110-inch TV. It costs $25,000 Australian dollars.
Wow.
It's 4K. Yeah, it's 4K only. 8K hasn't really taken off for lots of fantastic reasons, one of which is there's no content out there, so it doesn't really make any difference. Phones can shoot in 4K, but it's not great quality in general, so 4K is pretty much where it is. That's what everything you're getting is. It comes with a Dolby Atmos virtualized sound system, actually a real Dolby Atmos, not virtualized inside of it. So basically, it's one of those gadgets for someone who has everything and always says they want their wall to be a TV. I mean, personally, I think a projector is a more economical and useful approach to this, but having a large TV, it's probably worth noting that in some cinemas around the world, particularly in Dubai, actually, they use giant LED walls as their cinema experience because it's brighter, it's sharper than a projector. This is getting close to that. You can actually spend even more on something called a micro LED wall TV, which is made of lots of components to make a massive wall that's a TV, but they cost between $50,000 and $125,000 to even start. This is kind of more the budget approach to building a wall TV.
But imagine a TV 3 meters wide. You've got to put it in a big room, haven't you, to actually get the real benefit of viewing it.
You do, and you have to sit further away from it. I mean, these days, 4K TVs, the quality is so good that when my daughter stands close to the TV and I still tell her to stand away from it, I at least know it's not going to hurt her eyes the same way standing in front of an old TV would, because the quality is different. But when you double the size, you start tripling the sizes from 55 to 100 inches, you start looking at, you really have to sit much further back. It's not like having an IMAX built into your home. It's like knowing that you have to turn your head every direction. And that's not what TV viewing is supposed to be. If you're watching a projector, you want to take in as much as you can, which is why you sit further back. This is not dramatically different from that.
Let's talk about robots. Look, robots, in reference to the workforce, they will come to Australia, but you're saying that in South Korea, 10% of its workforce have been replaced by robots of various kinds.
Yeah, there are 1,100 robots in South Korea for every 10,000 humans, which is a staggering number. It's not the only country in the world to get that sort of high. Japan, China, India are all gradually getting up there. South Korea just got there faster than anyone else. Also worth pointing out, South Korea is basically, it's the base of operations for LG, for Samsung. It's the base of operations for Hyundai, and Hyundai has lots of different technology companies inside of it. So it's not thoroughly surprising. Some of the uses are, though. Everyone knows that robots build cars. We know that robots build lots of devices. What you may not be aware of is that they're being used in restaurants to fry chicken, to actually create food for regular people. So they are coming to Australia. They're still incredibly expensive right now, obviously. Right now it's mostly labor of humans, but Australia will start to see this in the coming next couple of years.
I dare say there'll be days when we, in the future when we see shop assistants, possibly, rather than there being a shop assistant in a David Jones or a Myer store, there'll be robots behind the counter that'll be looking after us.
Yeah, well, you'll have other things as well. It's things like large movements, big deliveries, big items being moved. That's where they're primarily being used in America. So factories and warehouses moving things. And part of the reason is it costs $250,000 for a robot that can keep moving things 24 hours a day and never feels pain when they move a large object, whereas a human will. So the hope here is that robots take the jobs of people that are kind of like unnecessary. People can do better things. But robots are primarily there to assist, like all automation, like all AI. It's not supposed to replace people in general. It's just supposed to assist.
All right, mate. Thank you so much. As always, we enjoy our weekly chats. You're up for it next Sunday?
I'm up for it. If you're up for it, I don't know when you're going on holiday, but I'm a tech journo. I'm working, man.
Well, we're working across all of the New Year break as well. So we'll catch up with you next Sunday, same time, same channel. Okay?
Sounds good. Happy to help.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye. That is Lee Stark. He is our tech guy. If you've got any questions for Lee, you can go to his website. It is pickr.com.au. That's his website. And if you've got any questions, you can send them to me. Go to the 2SM website, look for the drop-down list of names and send your questions for Lee to Brent Bultitude. You can do it 7 days a week, and we will put those questions to Lee Stark in person next Sunday morning after 9 o'clock.